I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I'm your host, the ever amazing, ever spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best kept secrets the mainstream audience may find boring. Welcome back, guys. This is the first ever edition of Secret Defenders, where I get guests to come on and speak, which gives me a rest from speaking because I do a lot of that in these. So I have got a good friend of mine, Andrew Knowles. Angry Andy Knowles is here to defend Bad Lieutenant, Port of New Orleans from 2009, starring our favourite actor, Nicolas Cage. So, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on board. And why have you wasted my time?
Me waste your time?
I'm joking. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Yes. Why are we here? So you're defending quite a cult film, quite a diversive film, a polarizing film. Critics loved it. Yeah. Audiences sort of loved it.
I think that's the most accurate description you could give it.
It's definitely a unique film. I've just watched it just now with yourself. Yes, I have to say it is one of the more unique films. Definitely a cult film. Definitely.
Despite how well it looks, it is definitely a cult film.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So I think we should just get stuck right in there. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions. So first of all, let's talk personally. Let's talk about us. Let's talk about how we know each other and how we became friends.
Well, we met in university, didn't we?
We certainly did.
Yeah. I think our first conversation that I can remember was, I think we were on a night out, and I think our conversation was about the first Transformers film. You probably won't remember
really?
That.
I know, because you were in my class, weren't you? I know they got swapped around in the final year. We were in an acting course when we were doing an acting course. In case people don't know, we were actors.
Yes, we were.
Careers failing.
Yeah,
but yeah, on the first Transformers movie, had I seen it?
You had, I think you had at that point.
Yeah,
And we were talking about it, and
it was around. Was it around 2007? That must have.
It was definitely within the first month or so of university. Mm. I think the film came out just prior to us going to university, I think.
Mm.
So I can't remember the conversation in depth, but it evolved from talking about like Michael Bay's mess, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
We were talking about the mess of the way he does things, how like ultra over the top it is, and then
tell what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. It slowly evolved into like the animated film, the original one.
Which I absolutely love.
Exactly. So I think that's where our conversation sort of like drifted off to, and then into sort of like how they're in like comic books and everything, which I didn't know at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a big comic book.
So I think that's where our conversation sort of like drifted towards, and since then, really.
I think everybody I really bond with, it's through pop culture, it's through movies, through comics, stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's when my strongest friendships come from. You know, sharing the love of something you love is always great.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it does build connections. But yeah, so we've been acting for quite a while. We've done quite a few things. We've been in plays together.
We have.
We've been in separate plays with other people. Lesser actors, I will say. We've all had our bad acting experiences, our bad acting stories. We won't go into that too much. But one of my favourite things about Andy is that when he enters a room, he will act out. Basically, think of any action, any violent action movie, or any kind of, think of Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, think of all the violent kind of films of the 90s, and Andy will combine every one of them. He'll pull out a samurai sword and start cutting you to pieces. He will then get out an Uzi and shoot you to pieces. He'll drop a grenade down your mouth and blow you up. Then he'll have sex with your corpse or what's left of your corpse.
That was once.
One time. One of my favourite ones. I mean, we always play along. Like all of our friends do it and we love it. We have such fun.
Make this sound like I do this at every walk of life.
Yeah, just walk into any room.
When I go to work, I walk in and eviscerate everyone.
And people go, "You're fired. You are so fired right now." But one of my favourite moments is when you were doing it, and then you went to pretend to break my neck.
Oh, and okay.
He actually moved my neck, and I was playing along, but I didn't move my neck with Andy's hands. And then we both heard a giant crack come from my neck, and we both looked at each other like, "Oh my fucking god, am I dead?" I've never seen Andy like shrivel and shrink away so quickly.
like a banshee.
Yeah, and I just went.
Yeah, but I remember that.
To be fair, my neck was actually much better after that. It was not a lot less stiff. So.
Intense chiropractic. I can't think of the word, was it?
Chiropractic?
Chiroproctory? Yeah, violent chiropractic.
But
everyone knows how to say that word properly.
Yes, please write in and to tell us how to speak words, which is basically what we're doing today.
Why are we doing
attempting
this?
To. anyway, that is Andy Knowlesome in a nutshell.
He is
a wonderful person. It's been your birthday recently, and I really do appreciate you being our very first guest. I've struggled to get guests on just organizational wise time and things like that, there's only a handful of people who've wanted to be guests so far, but I'm sure that will grow.
Oh, I'm sure it will. There'll be somebody who wants to do a better job than what I'm going to be able to do right here. So
I think you're doing a great job, please. So thank you again for coming on. So I think let's get started now, shall we?
Go for it.
We have a lot to talk about, so I'm just going to ask, I've got a few set questions for you. I just want you to kind of just riff and tell us what you can about this film. What can you say? So the first question is going to be, I think it's going to be a tough one for you. What is the plot of this film?
We were discussing this when we were watching it, weren't we? Mm-hmm. I've watched this film, Bad Lieutenant, starring the marvellous Nicolas Cage. I've watched it about 5-6 times now. And even I forget what the plot is. Even when I'm watching it. I mean, there's a bit in the middle of the film where it actually lays it out what's happening.
Yeah.
So basically, a family gets murdered. And basically, he's trying to solve the murder, but not really trying to solve it. He's after it for his own gains.
Yeah.
Which is basically to, get more drugs for himself.
Yes, get more drugs. So he's basically like, he is a bad lieutenant.
Yeah, he's a bad cop. He's a very bad cop.
So he's a drug addict. He's a gambler.
Yeah.
He abuses his power quite a bit throughout the film. I'm sure we'll get into that. Don't worry. But so there's a lot of kind of awkward, weird, very odd situations he gets in.
Yeah.
It's hard to, but basically he's all those things, and he's trying to investigate a murder. On the most basic level, that's kind of the plot, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's weird because the plot seems to deal less about itself and focuses more on the journey that Nicolas Cage takes. It's weird. It's almost like you're not watching a film about what the underlying plot is. It's more about just him doing really crazy things.
Yeah, I think like some films are very much plot driven and plot heavy, and that's what drives the story on.
Yeah.
It is about plot. But for me, this film was definitely more about character than anything else. It's about that performance.
Yeah. It's a ride.
Yes, it's a ride. And we were saying it's relentless and it just barrels on constantly, going. Doesn't really have a period where you're kind of like, oh, this is a quiet moment or this is
there was only one moment in the entire film, which is about 15 seconds long, where he is on the screen. About 15 seconds, and all it is just two women sat on the porch.
It cuts between the two women, and it doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, doesn't move the story along. It's just like two women, bit sad,
yeah,
and then that's exactly. And then we're back to Nicolas Cage doing what he does.
Like you said, it just barrels on relentlessly with him going more and more deeper and darker and
getting higher and higher.
Essentially. Yeah.
that's his journey throughout the film, get higher and higher.
Yeah.
And the kind of antics that come from his constant dependency on those drugs.
Yeah.
I think the thing that kind of kicks it off, I mean, we don't really, again, the way it starts is just like, and we're in.
Yeah.
No real introductions, no kind of easing you in.
You see why he develops this back pain. Back pain that he suffers as a character in the film is predominantly the undercurrent of everything. So essentially, that's the plot.
Yeah.
He's a guy who's got severe back pain, and he'll do anything to cover it up.
Well, I imagine, like, obviously, everyone's had a bit of a back issue here and there, pulled a back.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not nice, it's not, but he's, like, stated, laid out quite early on that he will be severe back pain throughout.
Yeah.
And if he's walking around, he's doing a very physical job, like being a policeman, that's going to really kill him. And you can, what I really actually really like, I think you noticed it, this is the first time you noticed
it. Yeah, exactly, after four or five times of watching it, yeah.
Yeah, you noticed that he has a physicality, doesn't he? It's almost like a kind of, he's got a hunch or a, almost like a Richard III type kind of, you know, physical, you know, he's showing you he's in pain physically. You know, a lot of actors might forget to do that or wouldn't even try to do that. But I do like Nick Cage's big choices.
And it does get more pronounced as well. After I'd noticed it, I noticed that it was getting more and more pronounced towards the end of the film. I'm kind of embarrassed I never saw it before, to be honest. But
it's a nice detail. And you can, I think after several viewings of myself, I will be able to peel little layers off and kind of see more. Because, I mean, at the moment, I've kind of purely, like, with just focused in on Nick Cage's crazy Nick Cage. You know,
we've literally had a 20 minutes, you know, break in between watching the film and doing this. So
yeah, and that's
still kind of like,
yeah, it's still very it's very fresh for me. Yeah. I know you've seen it a few times, but again, you're still seeing things fresh, and you're still and you're like you're not jaded about it. You're still enjoying it. You're still laughing along with these kind of crazier bits. So when and where did you discover the film? When were you made aware of it?
I think I was made aware of it by another one of our good friends, Nathan Richard Smith.
Oh, yes.
I think he mentioned that that it was being made, and that it was a remake of the Harvey Keitel one.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't watch it with him. I think I came across it when it was available on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when I bought it and I watched it then. But I knew that it got decent reception. The people saw it as like a quintessential Nick Cage film.
It very much is a Nick Cage film.
It's
barely off screen, and he puts in a performance to
definitely.
To be looked at, to be marvelled at, to be appreciated.
Marvelling's one
thought it is. But I remember Nathan showed me not really a spoiler, but Nathan showed me. He said he came to my, we lived together at the time. He knocked on my door and he said, Just come and watch this. Just come and watch this. And I came in, and there's basically a scene which Nick Cage sees two young people in a club. He kind of goes up to them and said, someone has witnessed you, you know, giving out drugs, selling drugs. Yeah. I'm going to arrest you. You know, you've been identified. And then he basically is trying to get drugs off them. He's trying to find actual drugs so he can take the drugs. And then, I won't say any more about that scene just yet, but it does escalate quite darkly, humorously.
Yeah,
it's kind of,
it goes the direction which you have no idea or expect in any way to go.
It's almost, I think a lot of this stuff feels like it's very much improvised. Like, it's just, it doesn't feel like you would write this shit down. It would just be like, Nick Cage has gone, I want to do this in the scene. I want to, you know.
Yeah.
I do see a lot of, you know, Venom, Tom Hardy's Venom.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point, man.
Because Tom Hardy's Venom, like, he's playing a comedy.
Yeah.
And everyone else is playing it entirely straight.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the same in this. Everyone is the straight man to Nick Cage's comedy movie.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, because they're literally, everybody is just they're not generic characters.
No,
if they were in any other cop movie, they would literally be a generic archetype.
Yeah, the grim, gritty, Dirty Harry,
the gangsters, the seedy older gangsters that can't get out of the life because they blew money left, right, and center. Yeah.
Yes, it's a really unique take, and like, I think that's I read on IMDb that Werner Herzog took the script. So I don't know what the original script was like, and I wouldn't mind having a look at it. But apparently, most of the iconic scenes, most memorable scenes,
were put in by him, were written in by him, or I imagine, yeah, you know, choreographed with Nick Cage involved.
Yeah.
Because they just go mad. You know, these scenes are just crazy. And again, I think what it would be that generic cop drama.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That's probably how most people would play it, but not Nick Cage. And,
yeah.
And I think it was originally, did you tell me it was originally set in New York, or it would have been set?
No, I think it was, they were going to set it in New York, weren't they? Yeah. I think that's what we read.
Yeah.
They were going to set it in New York, and then they reverted it back to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it plays to its benefit, really, because it's somewhere that's not really in a lot of films, is it?
No, exactly.
Especially films like that.
And post Katrina as well.
Yeah.
You get to see the... Yeah.
It adds a flavour and a character to the film that, if it was just set in New York, it would add to the just how generic it could have been.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that really said it was New Orleans to me was like the funeral for the family, yeah, that gets killed, because it's like a Haitian family, is it? Or
yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
we get from it
a Haitian family, and they're kind of doing a respective kind of burial, and they've got these feathers, and they're doing they're spitting out alcohol onto the caskets and things. And I thought that was really interesting. And again, like, you wouldn't, on a normal kind of New York cop drama, you wouldn't have that.
Yeah, it'd just be raining, and they'd be being buried in the rain while everyone's wearing black and white.
Yeah, and I think with the added kind of Katrina, the post-Katrina world, that you could get away with all the crazy shit that Nick Cage does get away with.
Exactly. I think because the attention still, because it's set, the initial part of the film set 6 months after Katrina. So there's still a lot of, you know, stuff that needs fixing. I mean, like one of the first establishing shots, like, which is 6 months after, you see like still damage from the hurricane, from all the flooding and everything. You still see damage where this murder's taken place. So there's still stuff that the rest of society's having to deal with. So he is able to, you know, go through the underground without anybody noticing.
Definitely, definitely. So I think that the post-Katrina helped this film. And it does give it a flavour that we haven't seen before, and that we didn't really kind of... I don't know if it was even addressed in most films like Katrina. Like, I don't know if there was very many, and that was quite close to the time, as far as I'm aware, I think.
It was 2009. I can't think of
it. Like
Katrina
2007 or 2008, something. Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it gives it something different.
Yeah,
gives it an energy and an unpredictability to this movie. So because you've talked about this movie, and you and Nathan to me have talked about this movie a lot, and you constantly quote it. It's a very quotable film.
Oh yeah, by far. Yeah.
Without a doubt. So what are the kind of reasons you go back to it? You've said you watched it multiple times. So why do you keep coming back? What are the reasons you love this movie?
I think it's just because of how crazy Nick Cage is in it. I mean, that sounds really sort of like obvious and you know, standard by his you know, films today.
Yeah,
but I love how aggressively crazy he is. I mean, the scene with again, spoilers slightly.
Yeah,
the scene with two old ladies in the care home where he just draws a gun on them for no reason. The scene's practically done. You could have easily called cut a couple of lines before, but he takes it that one step further. Nicolas Cage takes it that one step further.
You should drop dead, you selfish cunt. You ever think about your kids or your grandkids, huh? Sucking up their inheritance through that fucked oxygen tube and Benny's fucked intensive care. You fucks, I hate you. I hate you both. I should fuck you both. Just right now, I should fucking kill you fucking both! You're the fucking reason this country's going down the drain!
So with the old lady scene, we were saying, what kind of, like, I feel like he got what he wanted.
Yeah.
At that point, like, he literally, his motivation is getting what he wanted in that scene.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, yeah, just leave us alone now, leave us alone.
Yeah.
And he literally is about to turn away, leave, and then he goes...
No.
No, I'm going to kill you, fucks! I'm going to kill you, fucks!
That's essentially what happens. I mean, it's that one step further for literally no reason, but at the same time, it adds to his character. His character's sliding and sliding and sliding throughout the film. So it kind of makes sense, but at the same time, it's so offbeat.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I really enjoy this film. Purely for those moments, because those moments make the film.
I'll be honest, like, the moments where he is at his craziest
are the best moments in
the most
interesting, right, the most dynamic, the most, the one where you're like, because you the quieter moments you're like, yeah, I'm glad we have these, or I would,
yeah,
again with, exactly. I'm like watching the film, I'm still a bit exhausted by the end of it. I'm like,
yeah, it is a very exhausting film, and not because of like just there's too much going on, it's the sheer fact that it's so dark and oppressive because of the way Nicolas Cage is in it.
Yeah, it's so unique. So like, what is your favorite? I know you've talked about the reasons why you love it, but
yeah,
do you have a favorite moment, a favorite scene, a favorite,
yeah,
I don't know, even a favorite shot in the entire film?
Well, my favorite scene is the one with the two old ladies where he pulls the obnoxiously large magnum on them. I think it's that whole sequence where he's hiding behind the door, and no, he's just using an electric razor for no reason. They walk through the door, he closes the door behind him, and he's just shaving his face, and it's like, well, where did that come from? whose choice was that? Was that your choice, Nicholas? Or was that Werner Herzog's choice? I'm not quite sure. You just had it on you? Who gave you that? Who gave you the electric razor?
It reminded me, do you remember, you must remember Predator.
Yeah.
Where, is it, yeah, Bill Duke?
He's
constantly
shaving.
He's got the wet shaving. Yeah. He's not even like putting shaving cream on, he's just constantly shaving his,
yeah,
face.
Yeah.
And then it breaks and bleeds.
Cheek, yeah.
It was kind of, just reminded me of that for a second.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely one of his craziest scenes, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's about midway through, I think.
Yeah, it's coming towards like sort of like the climax.
Mm.
It's just over halfway through, and it is starting to build,
yeah,
towards like what's going to happen in the finale.
Because he's basically lost the only witness to a murder.
Yeah,
you know, this is actual plot as well. This is quite integral to the story.
But again, it takes you until you get there, turn your eyes and goes, well, I can't find it. Where is it?
Yeah,
and you go, oh yeah, that's actually important.
Oh, that's, yeah. You literally forget about what he's doing. You're like there's. I'll be honest, guys. There's very little police work done in this.
it's literally everybody else does the police work. He just runs around placing bets, taking drugs, and. Yeah, holding up young people in the car park.
It makes me think of like the Netflix Daredevil show, where Daredevil actually does very little lawyering in the entire thing. Like, I always thought a Daredevil show would be good because it's like a lawyer yeah, show. It's, you know, like it could be like a cool Ally McBeal or something, deadly dark Ally McBeal.
I would love to see that show.
Or a deadly dark Boston Legal or something.
Yeah. God, William Shatner going crazy.
Maybe he should have been in this. Maybe he should have been.
Probably shouldn't have been. Would have added to the mayhem.
Okay, right. What's next on the docket? What am I going to ask you next? Good question. I've had a beer, guys, so I'm already faltering.
You kind of need it when you watch this film, either during or after. You need to sort of like go, right, okay.
Yeah,
I need a beer.
You need a break. Need a break. It's,
exactly.
It's just like we said, relentless. Just beats you and keeps going. And like,
yeah.
I think I would need like if it went on for another 2 hours, I would probably need some cocaine myself.
Yeah.
I would need an upper ender to get through it.
Definitely.
This is a bit of a pointless question, really, because I think I already know what the answer is. Who is your favourite character in the film?
Well, the only character in the film is Nicolas Cage, isn't it? I mean, we were talking about it while we were watching it, that there are loads of great actors in the film.
Mm.
There's loads of great actors.
Super.
They all do like really small parts. I mean, Michael Shannon's in there, Val Kilmer, poor old Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
He's not what he used to be, but he's still pretty good in it.
Yeah. I mean,
Mendes is in it as well. So there are some... Really,
everyone like does their job. Everyone like,
yeah.
He is Nick Cage's partner. He plays Nick Cage's partner.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, they don't have much material to shine with.
No, no.
And again, when they're playing against Nick Cage's craziness,
yeah, they're overwhelmed completely.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it sounds like in any other film, it would be a bad thing, but it's not because the nature of the film itself, it needed Nicolas Cage to be like that.
Mm.
To be the only one that stands out against this backdrop of people just going about doing normal cop stuff or normal, you know, guest stuff, I was going to say.
He's like the bellboy.
Yeah, like Michael Shannon in it. I mean, I know it was, 2009, I think it was?
Yeah,
Still at that point, I think he was, you know... a fairly recognized actor.
Yeah.
At least it's still up and coming.
I think he had a few lead roles around that time.
Yeah.
But again, they weren't like Man of Steel Zod.
No, yeah, exactly. But even so, in this film, he's got two scenes.
Yeah.
There's another guy in there. I cannot remember his name. The guy who just goes, whoa.
Whoa. Oh God, yeah. Well,
he's a good actor.
He is great, yeah.
He gets a decent chunk.
I might look. I'll tell you what, I'm going to look his name up.
Go for it.
Yeah,
he gets a decent chunk in the film where basically he's up against Nick Cage, but it's almost like he's trying to be Nicolas Cage light.
Yeah, he's like,
it's weird.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's interesting because you see somebody who's probably just as mad as he is.
Yeah.
And then come the end of the film, the guy completely backtracks. Mm. The character's all like, oh, I didn't mean to offend you. You know, I'm so sorry. It's you know, we'll fix this. And
we'll
I like
everything
you.
Out. He's. I think what I said, he was like Nicolas Cage light, and he says whoa about like 20 times.
Yeah.
He's like.
That's a really well-remembered scene as well, just the sheer fact.
Yeah. Whoa.
And then retreats out to a room and just goes, hell yeah. And then walks off down the corridor. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay.
What he's doing, he says whoa about 15 times as he's leaving, because Nicolas Cage just threatened him because he's beating up Nick Cage's prostitute girlfriend, who's played by Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
Another phenomenal actor in this that, again, doesn't really get much to do.
Yeah.
But again, it's very talented anyway. So Nick Cage has got his gun out. He's got his big dick magnum gun out.
That's what it is.
It is
pure and simple.
It basically represents his dick because he's constantly getting it out.
Yeah.
And he's pointing the gun. There's even a scene later on, and it is I think it's very much like a power trip, and he does abuse his power throughout the film, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
In his position, even so far as trying to win a bet for a professional football game, American football game, he finds the guy who's local, and he basically threatens him with, because he saw him buy some weed. He was like, right, well, I'm gonna end your career. I'm gonna do this unless you fix your own game so I can win this massive bet.
Yeah.
So and it, like, it's even like, even his abuse of power goes as small or as big as he wants or as he needs it.
Yeah, exactly.
But majority of the scenes of this film is just Nick Cage walking into a room and asking or threatening people for drugs, pretty much.
Well, yeah, the crux of it, yeah.
Yeah, that's literally. And it's like crazy scene, crazy scene, crazy scene. And then the plot basically is just weaved between these crazy scene set pieces.
We said that again roughly halfway through when we checked the time, and it was like, Christ, there's still an hour and 10 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And we were knackered.
And we were like, oh God, really? Some more,
like,
crazy.
It's like they just videoed Nicolas Cage going crazy, and then went, right, we'll build a film around this. So it's like
when Bruce Lee died in before Game of Death was finished.
Yeah.
And then they were like, right, well, we've got those great scenes of him doing martial arts.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to have to figure out a story.
The film.
Yeah, we'll just have to figure out a story through these clips.
That's what it comes across as.
Yeah, it's very, very, very unusual. I'm trying to think of one of the other bits. This is kind of spoilers. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Yes, spoilers. Has been out for a very
long time. Spoilers, spoilers. I think we've avoided this. I think we've managed to avoid it pretty well without spoilers so far.
Yeah.
But basically, in the end, one of the end scenes is really weird because it ties up every loose end in the story.
Yeah,
in one scene, it just goes, oh, that's sorted.
Yeah, they all come up to his desk, don't they?
Yeah, they go. So one goes, oh yeah, we the guy we were trying to get, yeah, we found, and he's basically had a hand in all the
been
solved.
He's set up everything that happens in the end. He set it up throughout the course of the film.
Yeah,
you know, very cleverly.
Yeah, he's through manipulation and violence and, you know, blackmail and various other things. But they all come to, like, the commissioner comes to him and goes,
yeah,
the guy we're trying to arrest got his DNA on this crack pipe, which Nick Cage is literally like, this is my lucky crack pipe. He gives it to exhibits in this.
Jesus.
I've not seen him in much. Not seen him acting much, but I thought he was pretty good in this.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
he was generally. But yeah, and then the bet that he made, comes through,
magically comes through,
and Brad Dourif of Chucky fame, Worm Tongue. Is it Worm Tongue from
The Rings? The Rings, yeah,
yeah. You know. He's in this again, very small role, just like a regular role again. And Brad Dourif is an actor that does crazy very well. Like,
yeah, he is. Yeah,
very, like, I've seen him in lots of stuff.
Very much a character actor.
Yeah, and again, against Nick Cage's craziness, it's like, I'm sure
it just seems normal.
tone it down. But yeah, and he comes in and says, oh, your bet came through, here's $10,000. Oh, by the way, that parking ticket I asked you of my daughter's to fix.
Yeah, that's been done.
That's fixed, so that's good. And then what was the final thing? There was another thing I got solved. I can't remember.
Yeah. That's just it. They'll
literally run in one after another.
Yeah.
And just be like, oh, we fixed that. That's fixed. Don't worry. And he's just like, yeah, great. And even the commissioner's like laughing like a manic bastard. Yeah. He's just like,
it almost seems like that could have been like a twist. Like he's gone that crazy on drugs and everything. It all seems like it's worked out perfectly fine. But in reality, it actually has. It's all been solved for him.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me a little bit of? Is American Psycho, you know, when he thinks everything's turned to shit.
Yeah, he's just murdering.
And everyone's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
There was nothing there. There's no bodies. But my apartment's covered in blood and all this. He's like, no.
Yeah.
It's all good. It's like that. It reminds me of that. Look, everything's just tied up a little too neatly.
Yeah, when he kills Jared Leto in the film again. Well, it's been out for ages.
We're not spoiling American Psycho. If you've not seen it, go and see it.
Yeah, when Christian Bale kills Jared Leto, it's like one of the very first major sort of like horrible kills you see.
Mm.
By the end of the film, he's like, oh no, he is in London.
Mm.
So it's like nothing real happened.
Yeah, never, so it never,
and it almost comes across like that could have been what they were going for at the end of this. But no, he actually has solved all that.
Mm.
It has all been fixed, and he gets promoted to captain. And it's like, oh, okay,
great, okay. And even right at the end, like it's shown that he's like all of his family, because it's shown his dad's like an alcoholic, and his dad's wife's an alcoholic, and his, you know, his prostitute girlfriend is drug addicted as well.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end they're all like, no, we're on sparkling wine, we're on sparkling water,
yeah,
we're on, you know, we're, you know, teetotal,
yeah,
everything's fine. And even he is like, yep, no, we're good. He gets promoted to captain. And it's like, where does this come from? There's like nothing in the film to say that he regrets any of his actions, to say he's changed.
Well, he even confesses, I don't care about the murders.
Yeah.
It was never about the murders.
Yeah.
So the whole plot of the film doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't. That's what it's saying to us, that the whole film is telling us the plot doesn't matter constantly. And then they're just like,
and he admits himself.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, I'm looking for that guy, or I'm doing this. It's like a kind of the means to the end.
Yes,
we have to have a murder. Yes, he's a police officer. Yes, but look at all the crazy stuff he does.
Yeah,
you know, that's the more interesting thing. And seeing him do all this weird and wacky stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's so unique. Like, it's one of the most unique films I've ever seen. I did enjoy it, but it's so cult.
It definitely is.
Already I posted on Twitter earlier about, I said, what do you think of this film? What do you think of Nicolas Cage as an actor? What's your favorite Nicolas Cage performance? And then I think it was at Vinci's GT came back and said, nope, I hate him. And I was like that just shows exactly the type of Marmite actor he is.
And it was like, well, we were talking about like a lot of his recent releases overshadow his films from the 90s, and he did some amazing films during the 90s and early noughties before his financial, whatever happened.
Yeah.
Before his troubles started, and then just started spawning out these ridiculously crap films, you know. He did so many great films year after year after year in the 90s.
Consistently.
And they were,
he was a star. A big star.
A lot of them. He was nominated for, you know, Best Actor, or at least he was in the running.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so he did do a lot of great films. It's just
I know he won an award for this. Yeah. I don't think it was a major award. Like
I think it was like an indie one.
Yeah, it was kind of like an indie, because this did surprisingly well at like a lot of film festivals. You know,
yeah.
It's directed by Werner Herzog, who is quite famous for being quite an auteur director, and you know, I don't know a lot of his films. I couldn't name his catalogue of films off the top of my head, but I know his name, and I'm aware of his name.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm aware of the.
It is one of those names that you know, but then you're not sure why you know.
Yeah. Why am I aware of? And I think
film catalogue.
Even to me, like, and I'm a massive fan of like cult films and things like that. But I think the more art housey, you know, award winning films, I'm not aware of, like, years gone by. There's some weird shots in this film. There's some
absolutely bizarre shots.
I mean, should we talk about the iguanas?
Oh, the iguanas. I mean, I forget about that shot, and I see it every so often, you know, on like YouTube or whatever, when somebody posts up like a meme of it, and I'm like, Christ, how did I forget this was part of the film? And basically, they're doing a stakeout, and Nicolas Cage comes bounding into this room after he's taken some coke.
I think that's just any.
Yeah,
I think that's just any.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Film.
Yeah. He takes some coke and then he bounds into a room.
Needs narrowing down.
He bounds into this room where Val Kilmer and these other cops are doing a stakeout. And the first thing he says is, what are these iguanas doing here? And Val Kilmer's like, well, what iguanas? What are you on about? And he's pointing at him going, they're there, these iguanas. Why are they here? And then that's the scene. But it doesn't stop. There's about another minute of Nicolas Cage just staring at these iguanas. He's just staring at them. And then there's a part where he's not looking at them, but then there's like a couple of seconds where he's looking at them from the side of his eyes, you know, at the corner of his eye, and then he just stares at them and smiles. It's utterly bizarre.
And it's like, it's a handheld, isn't it? It must be like
a
handheld.
Yeah, like you said, I think it looked like a mobile phone.
Yeah, it did. It did look a little bit, because it's really shaky, and it's got this weird filter on it as well. It's kind of bulbous filter. And it does, it reminds me of things like Leaving Las Vegas. However, that is a great Nick Cage movie.
Yes,
probably that for me.
Yeah, mid-90s.
Yeah, mid-90s. Probably. I mean, I'm sure he was nominated for an Oscar. I'm pretty sure he was
nominated for
an Oscar. Definitely go out and see, if you want to see a serious, good, dark, grim and gritty Nick Cage film, which is hard. It's hard to watch. Like, it's hard to watch.
Really hard.
It's just like, it's the most realistic portrayal of alcoholism I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely heart wrenching. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. You know, with all the kind of weird filters and kind of bulbous cameras.
That's a difficult film to watch
as well. Yeah. That's really cult as well, and that's really unique. I think we've kind of like drug kind of experience films, or films about drugs, and the kind of you know, even like Natural Born Killers is very LSD you know, and that's kind of like, what, just weird as fuck. I think sometimes people either turn on to that or they turn right off to it.
I mean, it's because it's not a main factor of this film. It is literally just for two sequences. One with an alligator.
It's always got lizards in.
There's one with an alligator, and then there's one with the iguanas. It's just those two scenes, I think, where this camera shot, you know, happens. And it's like right up close to the lizards. The lizards are basically like in three quarter of the screen. And then you see like Nicolas Cage or whatever's happening behind them, you know, in the background, slightly phased out. And I don't really understand the symbolism behind it.
No, I
assume it is just purely to...
Yeah, I didn't like, for me, it didn't tell me anything about the story. It didn't tell me anything about the character. It was just like...
It was just there, wasn't
it? It was just like, there's iguanas that he doesn't see.
Yeah.
Like, I think with most films, the way to do that would be like, why are these iguanas here? And then he goes, there's no iguanas there. And then he looks again, they're not there.
Yeah.
It's to show that, you know, show that they're not actually there. But he kind of just, the iguanas...
It doubles down on this, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He goes, the iguanas are there. Accept it.
Yeah, they exist. He keeps kind of, like, in the corner of the eye, he keeps kind of just leering at the iguanas. He keeps kind of slightly turning.
I mean, it is as well. It's like the other cops are so focused on staring out the window or whatever it is they're looking at, and he just can't help but look at these iguanas.
Yeah, just has to look at those iguanas. it's just so, that's like, that's definitely the weirdest shot in the
film. By far.
And again, like we said, it doesn't say anything to us and tell us anything about
which is the good thing about this film, and also the bad thing about this film.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that doesn't really make sense.
This film makes sense. Like,
then that's kind of what the film is as well. That's why it works so well, because it is all that. It doesn't compromise on anything about that. It doesn't compromise on how crazy he is, or, you know, how close to sort of murdering people.
Yeah, exactly. How controversial his behavior is as a police, you know, as a police lieutenant, you wouldn't obviously act like that and keep your job.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he manages to keep, he manages to keep it very low.
Very surprisingly.
Like, he's as unlow key as anybody can be.
No one
seems to really notice.
Yeah.
Again, that's kind of like, kind of reminds me of American Psycho again, where it's like, people should know.
Yeah.
You should realize
pay attention a little bit.
Like American Psycho, you literally say, like, I'm going to fucking cut your head off or whatever. I can't think of a line now, but, you know, he says it and people are just like, yeah. And they're just, because they're so self-involved with themselves in the film, that, like, you know,
exactly,
they don't hear what he's saying. They don't pay attention. I think we should talk a little bit about
behind the scenes,
and the kind of
making of it. So we had a little kind of look through IMDb,
the trivia.
And I think one of the most interesting things was the so Bad Lieutenant was originally, I think, 1992, directed by Abel Ferreira, starring Harvey Keitel. Very similar plot.
Yeah.
He's a drug addicted, sexual deviant, bad lieutenant. You know, he's doing all these things. So that's the kind of, and it was produced by the same guy. They're both produced by the same guy. I think the same studio as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the similarities begin and end with it. But apparently, Abel Ferreira went. He said he found out it was being made. He said, oh, this is like a horrible feeling, like when you've been robbed. That was his first comment. Then he said, I hope everyone that's involved dies in hell. And I hope they all share the same car and have a violent car crash.
He's a very nice man.
So very fair. Very, yeah. It's not. I don't think he's bitter. He doesn't sound bitter.
No, he doesn't. No, not at all. Not even in the slightest.
Not in the slightest. Werner Herzog came back and said, "Well, I never saw the original, so it's not a remake." What happened was the producer put the Bad Lieutenant title on it.
Yeah, I think
that was it.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's why it has a subtitle. Is it? Was it Port of
Call, New Orleans?
There we go. I think that probably was the original title. And he went, oh well, there was a similar film a few years ago that I liked. It was very popular. Bam, you know, if people remember that film, you know, it's good. Because, I mean, nowadays, marketing for films is the name of the game. It's to get people out to see and it's expensive to market films. So a lot of people, like, that's why we get so many remakes and reimaginings and, as well, because of, like, rights, because we have certain film companies have to keep rights. So, like, that's why we've had so many goddamn Spider-Man films. As much as I like Spider-Man, don't get me wrong. This podcast is named after Spider-Man.
is it?
Believe it or not. So that's kind of one of the reasons. I think for marketing this film, that's why he's done it. I think that's why he's put the Bad Lieutenant. I mean,
just tap into that cult sort of vein.
I mean, I had heard of Bad Lieutenant, the Harvey Keitel version, because someone at college had seen it and they were like, oh, it's really good. It's really, really great performance, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So I had heard of it. So when this came out, I was like, oh, it's either a follow-up or, it's a remake. So it's weird because it's not technically a remake yet.
No, it's not.
Kind of is.
I mean, I've seen the original Harvey Keitel version. Mm-hmm. And
I imagine it's a very different film.
Yeah, it's very moody. It's very depressing.
Mm.
But there's very few sort of like tenuous links between the two. I mean, I'd have to watch it again because
I think it's purely just subject matter that it happens to have a cop. It happens to have a lieutenant who is drug addicted, you know.
I'd have to watch it again because I watched it when I sort of like had my movie renaissance when I was like 16, 17. When I was watching like Mean Streets and all those old Robert De Niro, Harry Keitel films. I think I watched it around about the same time as
Mean
Streets.
Still never seen Mean Streets.
Really not?
No, still not seen. I've not seen Casino either.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen?
Sorry.
That's disgusting.
I know.
What you just heard there is disgusting. I apologize.
I've seen The Reanimator. I've not seen Mean Streets.
No, but I watched it around about that time. So those films, they all kind of blended into one in my brain.
Yeah,
but they're I can sort of like visualize sections of the film, but again, I have to watch it again just to see how much of it is actually sort of either been copy and pasted or completely ignored altogether.
Yeah,
and I would probably go with the ignored altogether.
Yeah, it's from what it sounds like. I think again, it's just those similar plot points. Yeah. Going, oh, we had a film a few years ago that was like this.
Yeah.
Let's use that knowledge if people really liked that at the time, it was well reviewed.
Yeah,
you know, we might get some audience because of that.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something, man. I've forgotten entirely.
That's because you have a lot of casino. That's what it is.
No, you're right. That's what I was going to say. When I was younger, I really enjoy cult films or films that people are unappreciated, that they've never seen, you know, things like that. I really dig those. And people, when I was younger, people were like, Robert De Niro is the best actor. Al Pacino is the best actor. Mm. All the gangster films are the best films. And I was just like, I don't want to fucking watch them. I really have no interest in watching them. My actors were like the ones I loved were like Dennis Hopper, Jack Nicholson, Willem Dafoe, Gary Oldman. That you and me love Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman,
crazy Gary.
I think he'd be perfect in this role. Actually, I think if he, you know,
Christ, yeah.
his version of this would have been
a
amazing.
British bad lieutenant starring Gary Oldman.
I would pay good money to see that. I would pay good money. I think Gary Oldman is a very underrated actor. I'm surprised he hasn't won some form of like Oscar or Golden Globe. I'm sure he's probably won a Golden Globe or something like that. Did he win for Churchill? I don't know. Is that is Churchill coming up? Is Churchill going to be in the next selection of films?
No, that was last year. I think it was last year. Christ.
I can't remember. Well, if he did win, I'm glad he did because he's one of my favorites.
And if he didn't, he deserves to.
We tend to quote Gary Oldman from Hannibal, don't we?
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that's him either. Exactly. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
I love about him. Nobody realizes that the crazy guy that Hannibal Lecter
deformed
is Gary Oldman.
Yeah, and because he didn't want his name in the credits, is that right?
I didn't know that.
I think he doesn't have his name in the credits. I think.
So that's interesting because that adds to sort of like the mystery of them.
You do see him very briefly in the kind of flashback scenes of him
cutting his face.
Kind of, and camply dancing.
Peel off your face and feed it to the dog and something like that, I think.
But that makeup is incredible. I think it's probably not the strongest Hannibal Lecter movie.
No.
Probably not. No. But I really enjoyed it. I really like Hannibal Lecter when he's... What I like about Hannibal Lecter, he has this air of aristocracy, this air of kind of, he's very Oscar Wilde, very erudite, very, but deep down, he's a fucking savage. He's a fucking animal underneath all that. He is the worst, but he has this air of pomposity and like he's well read.
Yeah.
He loves classical music, all this, but deep down, he is less than human. He's the exact opposite of what he's not high society. He's very low society, the lowest society there is. Anyway, let's get back. We're talking about great films.
We properly devolved into somewhere else, and then we
don't worry. I'm used to doing tangents. Even when I'm recording on my own, I do a lot of tangents.
But no, going back to what you said about like sort of being forced to watch films by people. I think. For my money, I think Casino is probably the most underrated one out of everything.
Really?
So I'd recommend it purely on that because nobody really talks about it. They talk about Goodfellas, which I love to be.
Maybe I could do a Clone Wars, like the previous podcast today that you listened to. Maybe I could do Casino and Mean Streets, maybe.
See, I'd go more for Casino and Goodfellas. Even though it's directed by the same person, people.
For me, Clone Wars only really has to be very slight connection. And again, I don't think I've seen Goodfellas all the way through.
Have you not?
No, I don't think I've seen it all the way through.
Nathan will kill you.
I know. I'm sorry, people. Don't hurt me. I don't mean to be like this. Yeah. But again, I've watched every weird fucking film under the sun.
Yes, you have.
I've watched Superfly. I've watched,
oh God.
You name all the kind of weird cult films. Braindead I've watched.
Braindead,
Braindead is fucking amazing. If you're after gore and zombies and Peter Jackson, just go out and see Braindead. Or as it was known in the States, Dead Alive.
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
So let's go back to the film. I know we've had a good divulge.
Oh, yes.
Speaking about some of our favourite films there. So... Why do you think that this movie has what makes it so cult? And why do you think it has such a small fan base, or why the general public aren't willing to watch it, don't like it, or haven't even heard of it? What are those reasons?
I think it's purely because the subject matter. It's so in your face. It's like drug addiction, I wouldn't say ultra violence because not that much violence. But
it's not even that much blood.
It's not. It's that intense. In that way, it's like something could happen. Yeah. These people, they can all get blown away in an instant.
Yeah,
I think it's so intense and it is. It's hard work. It's a hard watch. Mm. I think that's why it never took off with a mainstream audience. But I don't think he ever expected it to be fair.
No.
Despite the production value and everything, I don't think they ever expected it to be a smash hit.
No, it's kind of an art house film meets, a cult film somewhere down the line.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can tell it has the money behind it and you can tell that a lot of effort
was put. Good filmmakers behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was targeting a very specific audience and it hits that specific audience.
Yeah.
So it's not really a surprise that it for it to be considered a cult film.
Yeah.
I see it as being a cult film. I don't see it as being anything else really of a cult film.
I think it's very much a cult film. And again, it's very much a Marmite performance. You could either love it or hate it.
Yeah. The whole film for me, I think, is Marmite. You could go one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, the quiet scenes are quiet. Like there's not much going on, when he's not going absolutely apeshit, when he's not going crazy cage, they're not that interesting. Again, I don't know if that's part of the original script and they have to have that stuff in for the plot to move forward.
There's just a few things, like with the whole, like, he takes Eva Mendes into a shed out the back of his father's house and he's talking about a treasure hunt, and he goes to turn the light on, tries it twice, and goes, "That doesn't work anymore." But was that a direction, or did you just add that in because you knew it didn't work? That's why the film is so good as well, because there's those little moments that you'd miss if you weren't familiar how Nicolas Cage worked.
Yeah, it's kind of
little quirks.
It's got nothing like it's a character moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's got
weird
little character moment. And
it tries the light. It tickled me greatly. It doesn't work for years.
I loved it. There was a bit where, like, his movements in it are great. Like, he's very kind of very direct.
As he said, bird-like.
Yeah, I've said he's very bird-like. Yeah, I think the hunch he has, very kind of Richard III hunch he has.
Like a vulture, isn't it?
It's almost, it's like a vulture. And he has very much a pronounced kind of crooked nose as well. And and with his hair, like, receding as far back as it does and going down, he does have this kind of presence. And that's what he kind of is, a vulture. I mean, throughout this film, he's picking up people when they're at their most vulnerable and abusing them and blackmailing them and getting what he wants, getting what he needs.
Yeah.
So it very much is a vulture. I like that. I mean, if there were shots of vultures,
it would have made more sense.
That would make more sense. Yeah. The iguanas are just like, okay. Yeah. Iguanas do what in relation to the film?
They just sliver around and
Or like snakes, because he's a bit snake-like as well. Like
the opening shot of the film is a snake that water.
No, that's you're right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I must have missed that.
It was literally like right at the beginning.
Yeah,
to be fair.
I think I might have blinked. missed that. But it's
hard to really sort of either give it the credence it needs or to be sort of like analytical, and
because you can go both ways with it. I think you can, if you showed it to two film critics, they can give you the complete opposite response to that film.
Yeah, exactly.
What is it? What's happening? Why is the character not changing? Yeah. You know, why there's all this quiet? Why are all these great actors wasted in these small roles where they don't really do anything? But then you can also go the other way. Like, I think you could have, like, I think Roger Ebert really liked it. I think he gave it some sort of...
And then I think somebody like the Sunday Times or something slated it.
There you go.
But it's one of those, because the legendary Roger Ebert, God rest his soul, and all that. You know, he was very strict on films.
Yeah,
very,
like,
and he loved it.
Yeah, he had very, like, a lot of his opinions could be like...
Yeah.
I think the audience out there, the fan base out there, do love this, and they'd love it because of the performance.
Yeah.
It is all about the
performance. It is, quintessentially, it's all about the performance.
And Nick Cage. So talking about Nick Cage, is this his best performance? Is this his best... Is this his craziest? Is this his best crazy performance? Or is there crazier performances out there?
It's one of them. It's one of his best crazy performances, but it's not my favorite performance.
Okay,
it's not my favorite. I much prefer sort of like his 90s performances.
Yeah, yeah.
Purely when he's going so in depth in the character that it, like with what you said about leaving Las Vegas, he made himself almost an alcoholic, didn't he?
I think he drank a lot before the scenes.
Yeah. So I much prefer when he's that kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I love crazy altogether.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm a very crazy person. I love it when manic stuff happens on screen. I absolutely love it. But it's not my favorite.
No.
It's not my favorite performance in Nicolas Cage. But
would it be in a top 10?
Top
five.
It's in my top five. Definitely.
Okay,
top five.
Not Ghost Rider then.
Oh God, no. that's crazy. That's crazy. Where there's nothing. I say there's nothing to back it up. There's nothing really to back it up in Bad Lieutenant. But
no.
That crazy in Ghost Rider is just, it's the wrong film for that film.
Yeah, it's kind of, You, the for me, the craziness should come through Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Because he's a he's a flaming-headed demon on a bike.
Yeah.
You know, the other side of Ghost Rider should be relatively,
relatively
normal.
Straight and
yeah, and like, played straight. I actually thought the original Ghost Rider film, I was like, why didn't they just keep the young guy playing, you know, the young guy where he plays the young Nick Cage character, Johnny Blaze.
Yeah.
Because I liked him loads more.
Yeah. And
I thought he was, he did a really good impression of Nick Cage's performance as well.
Yeah.
Which I think was really good. But that film is shockingly bad. Yeah. The sequel is a bit better, but not by much. You've
got not much at all.
French Idris Elba.
What are you doing?
For some reason. Ghost Rider pissing flames.
Yeah, that was on the promotional footage as well, wasn't it? Like, here it is. And it was like, oh, you're not doing what we wanted you to do. You've gone the complete opposite way.
Yeah.
More crazy does not make it better with Ghost Rider.
I think there are kind of shots, again, shots that are probably comparable to the shots in this, kind of when it's going a bit odd and weird and like, and when he's like, Ghost Rider's move and he turns up, it is a bit ethereal and kind of LSD-like.
Yeah, yeah. But again, that's
like acid, actually. Yeah. Like
that was for a mainstream audience.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas in this, in Bad Lieutenant, you know, you could get away with that stuff and not have to explain or compromise on it.
Exactly. I'm just trying to think about, actually, can we talk about the crack pipe scene a little bit?
My favourite crack pipe. My lucky crack pipe.
This is towards the end of the film.
Yeah. What a bizarre sequence. Absolutely bizarre. So basically it's when everything starts to come together, isn't it? So like his master plan, he's got some drugs, he's selling some drugs, and this guy comes in who's been chasing him for about a third of the film.
Yeah, so this kind of mobster. So the guy who's kind of outcaged Nick Cage, or the Macho Man Randy Savage impression, as I see it. Because I thought that initially, and I was like, no, he's Macho Man. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Whoa. You know, all that. But yeah, he comes in and is like, I'm chasing my money. So yeah, Nick Cage is working with Exhibit's character.
Yeah.
He's been chasing him throughout the entire film because he's linked to these murders. But he kind of goes, well, I need drugs. So this is the best way for me to get drugs.
I need the money as well.
Yeah. So that the gangster walks in and says, right. Well, no, it's before that, really. Before that mobster come in, isn't
it? Yeah, the smoking, you know, crack. And Nicolas Cage just pulls out his own crack pipe and says, hit me up if you got some more. And then they share it between the two of them. And that leads into sort of like the end of the film.
Yeah. He goes proper crazy. Like this, I think this is the point of the film where he is at his
peak. Yeah, he peaks.
Yeah.
He is peak craziness.
Yeah. Like it kind of, again, we've got the, I don't think we spoke about the, we didn't go back to that, the drugs with the kids in the club. We didn't go back to that scene.
Oh, no, God.
But we'll go back to that. We'll go back to that quickly. So, yeah, so he picks up these kids because he thinks they're doing drugs.
Yeah.
And then it gets a bit sexually perverse.
That's what we were saying earlier. Like, it goes the direction you didn't anticipate to go.
It reminds me again of, it just reminds me of a load of films. Do you remember Naked? One of our tutors was in fact in Mike Lee's Naked. Do you ever watch it?
I never watched that.
You never saw it?
I didn't really want to watch
it. Yeah. We started watching, we put it on, we were like, oh, Darren, our tutor's in this. And we were like, great, okay, let's watch it. And it was already quite a well-known film anyway, for reasons. David Hewlett is in it, he plays the main character. But I noticed that and it's mostly an improv film. Like
I remember that.
And almost every single scene, like back to back, he'd meet a woman, he's kind of homeless, kind of, you know, vagrant kind of thing. He goes to these women, meets them, and then has rough sex / rape with them.
Yeah, I think that was what sort of like put me off it.
Yeah, it's kind of, and they're all kind of back to back. All these scenes are back to back. And I'm thinking, if this scene is improvised, then David Thewlis is constantly going there.
Yeah, where's the line drawn?
I did see the scene with my tutor, and it's basically he's the old school kind of, you know, those posters you used to kind of put in.
Yeah, I remember him explaining the scene.
Had like a kind of brush, and you put the brush on, then he slapped the poster up, and then put the brush over.
They still use that?
Yeah, they probably do. I think maybe that's
the modern age.
The modern age probably don't use. I don't know what they would use, but yeah. It reminded me of that because it was like improvised scenes, kind of. You've just got to say, in regards to acting, with improvised scenes, you've just got to keep saying yes. Constantly, yes, yes,
yeah,
yes,
you,
yes.
You, if you block it with anything, it kills it dead.
Kills it dead. Yeah.
And the same thing is, there's always the danger that it snowballs in the same direction.
Exactly.
Depending on what you...
Exactly. And I think that's what's happened. That's what I think happens with this scene, is he decides to take it in this... I think, again, like the old lady scene as well, he just goes... I think he's just had Free Reign by Werner Herzog, and he's just gone, go crazy, go mad. Yeah.
It's quite obvious the actress that he's in the scene with kind of knew what was coming. And what,
I don't think it's a case
of like he just takes the reins completely.
No. I don't think she was made to feel uncomfortable.
The dialogue is probably bizarre, and the way that he acts in the scene is bizarre.
So basically, he gets the two kids. He finds some drugs.
They're
over 18, 20, early 20s at least. But young people, then.
Young people.
But yeah, so he gets them, and then he's like, right, empty your bag, show me all your drugs, where are your drugs? And this guy is kind of like a preppy kid. He's like, oh, my dad finds out.
He's going to have a heart attack and kill him.
He's got a lot, one of my favorite lines in it. He's like, can I come to jail over the weekends?
Jesus, yeah. You know, that's just so throwaway.
I was just like,
I could come to jail on the weekends and it'll be fine.
It'll be fine, just don't tell my dad. He's like, if I was your dad, I'd want to know. And then slowly but surely, he's like, he finds a crack pipe in the girl's bag, and he goes, right. And he basically just says, where's the crack? I want some crack. She's like, you want to hit? He's like, yeah. So she smokes the crack pipe and blows it into his mouth a couple of times, and he's like,
And then
all of a sudden it's like he gets excited, and then they start having sex, and the guy's still up against the wall and he's going like what the fuck and I think anybody who watches that scene is thinking the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't end there. He tries to run away with the kid. And then Nicolas Cage pulls out his big dick gun and fires into the air and goes, you stay and you watch me fuck your girlfriend. It's like, oh, where did this come from?
And that's where the scene ends as well. Yeah.
There's no repercussions. No, it just ends.
And it's got nothing to do with the plot. It doesn't advance the plot anymore. It just shows you how fucked up Nicolas Cage's character is.
How determined he is.
The dialogue while he's having sex with her is even weirder. Yeah. He starts acting like, why does she smoke crack? Yeah. Why is she so fucked up? Why does she make these bad decisions?
There's like questions like, did you get abused? And she's like, no.
Yeah, he's like, did
your daddy not come and watch your school play?
He's just coming up with all these weird reasons. And they're just basically just having sex. And he's like,
But again, that scene is one of the scenes that people go to when they talk about this film.
Well, that was the scene I was in. And my friend was like, just watch this fucking mental scene. Nathan was like, just watch this crazy scene. And I was like, fucking hell. And after I saw that scene, I never saw it. I've only seen it today. Today is the first time I've seen it. But I've heard and seen the clips,
me and Nathan reenacted that scene for you. I think
probably,
at one point.
Probably. I wouldn't have been surprised. But I remember there's several videos. Like, one of my favorite videos on YouTube is like Nick Cage loses his shit, which is just a collection of him going absolutely nuts in all the films he's ever been in, and it's great, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
There's Kisses of the Vampires in there.
And most of those films that are in that 10 minute video, Nicolas Cage loses his shit. They're all from the 90s.
Yeah. All the best ones.
All the best ones.
You don't see Bangkok Dangerous in there, do you?
No. Oh my God, what a terrible film that is.
Yeah. So I think he's just, we were going back to the crack pipe. Yeah. Sorry. We're jumping all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. I do apologize. But the film does the exact same thing. So let's jump back to the crack pipe scene. So we went over that one. We talked about the three craziest scenes in the film.
Yeah. And I think this one's the height. Yeah. This feeds into the how crazy it is.
Yeah. And there's a little scene before this in a car, but this one's kind of, it's better. It's still a little crazy, but it's not as crazy. To the break of dawn! It's like pointing big gun. It's got a big gun. And like, the big gun is obviously quite the metaphor in this movie.
I think it is definitely.
For his power and
He whaps it out whenever he wants to assert his authority.
Oh, definitely. He just goes, I'm going to shoot you. Like, I forgot to talk about the prescription scene.
Oh, God.
Oh, we've got to talk about the prescription. Let's talk about that, and then we'll go back.
Yeah.
We've got time. We've got loads of time.
We've got loads of time. We've got loads of time.
So the prescription scene, he goes in. It's a chemist. It's a normal chemist. And all he's going in is for some medication for his back. That is literally it. And it just devolves. What happens there?
Within literally, I don't know, 10 seconds, the chemist is on the phone, and he's just screaming at her. So he can have his prescription, and he just loses it almost with immediately. Loses it immediately. Storms behind, starts throwing things everywhere, and then the security guy comes over.
Sounds like one of my customers.
Yeah, the security guy comes over, and he goes, I'm a cop, you know, I can do what I want. See this? And shows him the gun. Shows him the big gun.
He even said, I think the security guard goes, but why are you acting so crazy?
Yeah. And he goes, fuck you. And looks straight on.
Yeah, he gives her a bigger tip. He says, well, yeah. I get a discount, but
here. $23? Here's $40. Yeah. Buy everyone a drink. Yeah. Fuck you. Walk straight out.
To be fair, he could have taken more drugs. It surprises me at that point in the film he doesn't take more kind of.
Yeah, he just takes his Valium.
Yeah, he just takes whatever drugs he's prescribed. It's just like that is just that is the tip of the iceberg of the whole film. It just gets.
I think we said that, didn't we?
Yeah, consistently crazy.
You looked at me and you went, "What is this? This is just the beginning, mate. We still got like an hour and 45 minutes to go.
Fucking hell. Oh, I don't think it was like 5 minutes in. I think it was more than that. I was like, 2 hours? I was like, surely this isn't 2 hours. I don't think I've been this exhausted since I watched Mad Max Fury Road.
And that's relentless as well.
Yeah, it doesn't stop.
It's relentless of a different nature, this though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's much more character driven. Like, that's more like situation and set pieces, and it's relentless. But with this, it's purely.
It comes to a head with the whole ending crack pipe scene. So they're all in place, all these crazy people, and then they obviously Italian-ish gangster upsets Exhibit.
Hmm.
Exhibit just blows him away, and then they blow away the two guards as well that came in.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, I forgot about this
a bit. Then, so they're all high as a kite. Nicolas Cage is laughing and sneering, and he sneers and laughs for about, it must be about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But he's just saying stuff that I can't remember to Exhibit.
He was saying stuff like, he was saying stuff like "I'm not Easy E," and then laughing and all sorts of weird shit. Like he's like, someone goes, "That's the crack talking." You know, I don't know why that's my white man voice, but
it's not far. It's like crack talking.
It's kind of just like it's kind of just this.
Yeah.
This kind of it's like it's almost like they put it in afterwards.
Yeah, and then everyone gets blown away, and then literally they stop shooting. Nicolas Cage goes, "Shoot him again," and one of the guys goes, "Why the fuck should I?" And he goes, "His soul's still dancing." And then the camera pans, and there's a breakdancer in the middle of the room wearing the same costume.
Yeah, the exact same outfit.
Blown away.
Red blazer and everything, yeah.
And Nicolas Cage just watched him like he was watching the bloody, whatever they are, those lizards.
Yeah, like he's staring at them like they
can't. It just hammers home everything about the film
in
that sequence. It just hammers everything home.
Mm. Yeah, I watched the trailer, and the trailer's quite tame. It's not like an R-rated trailer. And it doesn't, I wouldn't say it sells the film very well. I mean, it kind of hints at the craziness that's in it.
Yeah.
But I was like, but it is much more plot-based. It was like, this is the plot. He's got a bad back. He's taking drugs. You know, and there's a few hints at how crazy it gets.
Yeah, so the plot you get in the trailer is pretty much all the plot you get in the film.
Yeah, exactly. If you watch the trailer, that's all you need to know about the plot, basically. But like you said, it was never about the murders. But like, when I saw that bit in the trailer, it was like, shoot him again, his soul's still dancing. You know, doing that weird laugh, he does that kind of raspy laugh. Not even a laugh, really. But I thought that's just going to be like, why? And then they'll turn and he's dead. But they turn and then there's a breakdance.
It is literally, wearing the exact same costume that the
electric boogaloo.
Yeah. And he's just spinning around and he goes, "Well, you just shoot him again." Fire the shot.
Yeah, it shoots and he kind of falls over.
Yeah.
You kind of don't really see them shoot him though.
So
he kind of just falls.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is just.
It is like, so like, that's it. That's the peak of the madness.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't get any madder than that. But the whole thing is just mental. Like, just absolutely mental. Like, I don't think I could, like, I've compared it to in moments to a few other films, but I couldn't com-
compare this full film to another full film.
No, I don't think I could either. If somebody was to ask me to compare it to something else, I don't think I'd be able to.
It's just a bizarre kind of tumble down the rabbit hole, and you're just continually falling.
Relentlessly falling.
And just seeing all the weird shit pass you by. Yeah. Melting clocks and, you know, yeah, iguanas. And
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage and close-ups with crocodiles.
Fat Val Kilmer.
Fat Val Kilmer. It's not even like the good actors in it get much to play with. Like the scenes that literally Nick Cage comes in.
We said it earlier on.
Says a couple of it's not even 2 minutes. Most of the scenes.
The scenes are very short.
They're like bye. And it's like they don't even get to say much or add to the story. They're just kind of responding to him. He's the catalyst of this film. He's constantly, he's the thing that keeps it moving. And you're following him through the film.
Yeah. And that's why it's exhausting, because it is literally shot, cut. There's no bleeding in of scenes or anything. It's just simply scene, cut, scene, cut. There's no fade to blacks. It's just, cut there.
Like most stories have interludes. You know, even the smallest, you know, short story even comics. I read a Spider-Man and Venom comic once, and it's basically them just fighting to death on an island. Mm. There was two interludes in that. That's just 20 pages.
Yeah.
There were still two interludes in that story.
Yeah.
That had no break. No.
Well, we did. We had that 15 seconds and we're sat on the porch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I took a breath.
Yeah.
I managed to take one breath and then we were back.
Yeah.
We were back to big guns, big dicks, drugs.
I've got a question for you.
Oh, okay.
What would you give this on a Nicolas Cage out of 10?
A Nicolas Cage out of 10.
So what? One being
one kind of rate.
One being tame and what, like 10 being.
So like a more like
really crazy.
Okay, so craziness level. Level. So okay, so
consider you've watched a lot of Nicolas.
I have seen a lot. Yeah, I've seen a lot of things. You know, too many to mention. But you know, I've not seen all of them.
No.
But I'd say we're looking at least a 9.
Yeah,
I think. Eight or nine, more of a no, definitely a 9.
Definitely
I wouldn't say 10 because I feel like I don't think even Nick Cage has the ability to go that far in himself. I don't know, maybe when
he's this is it. We were talking earlier, we haven't seen the film called Mandy, and apparently, that's really, really good.
Apparently,
really, really good Nicolas Cage film,
Apparently, has a cocaine fueled chainsaw fight,
exactly. So that might be his 10, you know,
maybe that's a spiritual sequel to this.
I can't see it, but if it is, good Lord, God Almighty.
But no, I've heard good things about it, and I definitely do really, really want to see that one.
Likewise.
But I think we're slowly winding now. I think we're slowly coming to an end. I think we've said pretty much all we can say. Yeah, I think I'm out of notes, really. I think we've discussed it one way or another. I'm out of notes, so I've got nothing left to say.
Just
cut it off there. Done. Done talking. I've got a little test. This is.
Oh, you didn't tell me about this.
No, I've got a little test. It's not for you. It's for the film itself. I'm not gonna test you. I'm just gonna see if you agree with this. What it is I've put together various tropes that kind of crop up in cult films. So obviously cult films come from all, you know, different genres and various things, but a few things kind of stick out a little bit more than most in most cult films. You know, be it whatever, you know. It could be whatever, but we'll go through the list. I want to see if this film, if it gets a decent amount of, you know, yeses. I mean, I consider it a cool film anyway.
Well, yeah, so do I. So
just
we'll play the game anyway.
We'll go for it. So Andrew Knowles.
Yes.
Does this film feature excessive violence?
Oh, I don't think it does. I think it threatens to show excessive violence. Mm.
But it's not actually on the screen.
No, it's not.
It's more the
implication.
The implications,
So we're not with the old ladies.
He didn't shoot them. He didn't shoot them.
But he's very close.
Yeah, he's on the edge.
Yeah. I don't think I would have liked to see that anyway.
Those gangsters do get shot.
They do, but it's not gory.
No, there's not a lot of blood. There's not a lot of blood.
No.
I think that leads on to the second question. Does it feature buckets of blood?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. No, there's very
apart from an alligator that's split in half by a car.
Do you think that was a real alligator?
No.
Nah, I don't think so either. Well, the one that's alive in that weird shot is definitely alive.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Is that or is it a crocodile? I'm not sure. New Orleans.
I can't remember.
Somebody get
if anybody knows.
Somebody get back to us and tell it what's the difference.
Hit the comment section.
Okay. Is there any gratuitous? Does it feature gratuitous nudity?
No, it doesn't. But it does feature gratuitous Nicolas Cage grinding on young females.
It's because that's what everyone wants to see. That's
I've never
that's
seen
they,
that before.
That's what they tuned in for. They were like, yeah, exactly. Just grand on that. So, but she does. We do see her bottom, don't we?
We do. They're not wearing any panties. She says that as well.
She was not. So I don't know if that counts. One bottom.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I'm chalking up.
We'll say.
No point.
We'll give him 1 point. So we've got 1 point. So no excessive violence. No book is a bird. But now, I think this is going to be a yeah.
Is this a big yes?
Does it feature over the top acting?
Yes.
Definite yes.
From one man, right?
This one man. This one man film. It might as well have been one man.
Yeah. You could have had cardboard cutouts and nobody else would have noticed.
Do you think in this film Nick Cage is a, this isn't part of the test, but do you think Nick Cage is being selfish in the scenes, as a selfish actor?
No.
Is he stealing the scenes to the detriment of the other actors?
No, because there's that good scene where the young boy sneaks in through the window into the grandma's room. He has a really good scene where basically the focus is entirely on the young kid.
Yes.
That's the question.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see the kids, he might be terrified of Nick at that point. I don't know. But you can tell that Nicolas Cage is gifting him.
Yeah, he's giving him the moment to shine.
So, yeah, so there are moments where it is all Nick Cage, but I don't think he purposely steals the thing. I think it's just the way that he's developed that character.
Yeah, and the way the film focuses
on him. The character absorbs everything in the film. That's different from somebody stealing.
No, you're right. No, you are exactly.
Different from sort of,
we know. Yeah. We know what you know. Being a selfish actor is. We've worked with some.
Yes, we have. Nathan Smith. If you're listening,
definitely the most selfish.
Nathan Richard Smith,
named and shamed. Okay, so it does feature over the top acting. So
yes.
What's that?
That's a big
two.
Yes.
That's two so far.
Two.
Does it have a ludicrous premise? Does it feature a ludicrous premise?
Well, the premise is actually, you know, the basic plot of the family murder.
Yeah,
but
it's pretty
what happens
standard.
Around it,
yeah,
completely ludicrous.
Yeah,
which is what I think we tapped into earlier on about, like, it's post Katrina crisis, so all this madness is allowed to happen because focuses are elsewhere. They're still dealing with the aftermath.
Definitely.
So it does have a ludicrous premise, but
I'd say no. So still on two there. Does it feature an experienced elder actor?
Oh.
So with that, I mean, like, quite advanced in age. So, you know, a 50 plus, I'd say. I mean, he's not
in the spotlight.
No.
Not in the spotlight. I don't know whether it is. Is he 50 plus there? I don't know.
I guess, sort of. I mean, Val Kilmer must be coming close to 50 at least.
Yeah, again, I don't really know. Val Kilmer looks older than he is.
We'll say no.
Yeah.
Here's a big yes. Does it feature quotable dialogue?
Absolutely. We don't even need to bother. We've already quoted half the film in this podcast alone.
I kind of don't even want to ruin the rest of the quotes. I want to just leave that for
there's more?
Your viewing. Yeah. Well, I do. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so that was yes. So that's three. We're on three. Does it feature a martial arts display? Of some sort.
No.
No.
No, it really doesn't.
It really does. There's breakdancing. There's breakdancing.
Yeah, there's breakdancing.
Does it feature gunplay?
Gunplay in the sense of, like, action sequences? Or just him?
I think, I mean, you could argue he does play with his gun and
yeah.
No, I just mean kind of firing a gun, use of a gun.
Well, yeah, those gangsters kept blowing away pretty horrifically, don't they?
That's true. Four. Does it feature a professional sport?
I mean, it does.
It does, yeah. So it does. It features American football because he's betting and gambling
on it. He's constantly betting on Louisiana to win.
That's right.
And that's how he gets into all this debt, which factors into the end of the film.
Yeah, it does, actually. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So what's that, five? We're on five?
I think
five?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Does it feature body swapping?
No.
No, definitely not.
Just no.
Does it feature smart characters making stupid decisions?
Oh, I don't really know.
It's hard to say.
It is hard to say. I don't know. Not in the sense of, like, somebody.
He's not like a scientist, and he's it's not like Prometheus, where he's like, "We can breathe. We'll be fine."
Yeah. No. It's nothing like that.
No problem. Okay. So on five, is something? Does it feature something that's non-threatening made threatening? So like Knights of the Lupus are deadly giant bunny rabbits.
Again, I'd have to say no.
No.
It's not looking good for the Bad Lieutenant in terms of cult status, but we're going
to
ignore.
I mean, these are subject to change. If you if you want to add any questions to this, if anybody else wants to add any questions to the cult film test, this is something I've come up with. If you come up with any other tropes,
I do like it though. It's very thorough.
Any other tropes? Any other ideas? Does it feature machismo?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That's a big yes.
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, the way he acts, I'd say.
Well, the gun is a metaphor
for his penis. Definitely.
All the time.
I mean, machismo, that includes toxic masculinity as well.
You can tell that gun's heavy as well. I think that was one of the trivia things I read a long time ago was that he wanted the gun to be really heavy.
Right.
So it looked like that. Every time he pulls it out, you can see he's actually using the full
force of his body. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that. Okay, so what's that? Six? Six?
Yeah, six, yeah.
Six. Okay. I'll just open my phone again. Has it locked for some reason?
Oh, dear.
Okay. So my choose mode. Does it feature dance choreography?
Yes, it does.
It does. Okay. Number seven. just that one sequence. Just that one still dancing sequence. But it does. This is another giant yes. Does it feature a metric ton of drugs?
Well, I think more than a metric ton, to be honest. But yeah.
Gallons and gallons and gallons. The eight? Eight now?
Yes,
I'll let you keep going.
We're on eight.
Does it feature pseudoscience?
No,
kind of science fiction element.
No, not in the vein that you're looking for.
No. This is an interesting one. Does it feature a post-apocalyptic world? Could you argue that the post-Katrina, Louisiana, you know, New Orleans is?
I would argue that it is in a way, because the reason he gets away with things is because of everywhere still in chaos.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Arguably, yes, but is it in the vein of sort of like a cult film? No.
Yes. So
the world's not destroyed.
It's not like Reign of Fire where the dragons have taken over and everything's wasted. So do you want to say yes or no? I'll let you decide.
Let's give it half. Let's give it eight. It's only 8.5.
8.5. Does it feature sexual fetishes?
Yes.
Yep. Taking smoking crack and having sex with young female girls pointing a gun at her boyfriend.
He bursts into a room where Eva Mendes is dealing with a client and they have a mutual conversation about him, you know, getting some drugs from the other guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind
of. Yeah, sure.
So it's 9.5.
9.5. Does it feature a diverse cast?
Oh, yes, actually, it does.
I think it does too. Yeah, I agree. Does it feature a heist?
No.
No, it doesn't feature a heist.
10.5 run.
That would be interesting, though. That would be interesting to see how he could organise a heist while being that high.
I kind of wish it was in the film, now, to be fair.
Bad Lieutenant, the heist.
Well, that'd be an interesting sequel, that.
Does it feature a montage? Not unlike a training Rocky montage or...
No, the closest thing we get to it is the scene with the iguanas where it's just focusing on them.
It's
not a montage.
It's not several different things.
No, it's just
several different shots of the same thing.
Yeah, no.
So we're on 9.5 still. 10.5. Does it feature Cold War politics?
No.
No. Does it feature a grizzled cop?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, a grizzled in the sense that he's very...
Yeah, he's
been through the ringer.
Noirish sensibilities. Yeah.
So 11.5.
Does it feature a conspiracy?
Oh,
I guess a smaller conspiracies.
Yeah, because he builds the conspiracy, doesn't he? He
creates it, doesn't he? He creates the case through non-lawful means.
Yeah, exactly. So
you say yeah, cool.
Oh no, yeah, 12.5. Yeah,
12.5. Okay. Does it feature a resurrection?
No.
No. No, everyone's very dead.
It points to it at the end and then goes, well, actually, he hasn't changed at all.
Yeah. Does it feature an unconventional love story?
Yes, it does.
It does. It does.
Really does. Eva Mendes,
Does it feature sport cars? Sports cars?
Again, no, it doesn't. But it would have been even better if it had done. If he was driving a full-blown Mustang.
So does it feature little people?
Funnily enough, there is a sequence, I think you missed it, sequence where he's walking into a cafe or a shop or something, and
there's a little person there. Okay, fair.
But it's not a thingy, but there's someone in there.
That counts.
That's a purposeful shot as well.
Yeah.
It's a purposeful shot.
So. I clearly missed that, definitely. But it wouldn't add to it weird. Yeah. It's add to its weird.
Again, yeah, because it is a bit bizarre, really.
Does it feature an animal in a starring role?
The iguanas.
Yes.
They're on the front. Lizards are on the front cover. There's a snake on the front cover. An iguana on the front cover. So yes. Yes, it does. 15.5.
That's good. That's a good score. Does it feature noir-like narration?
No.
It probably, I don't think you need it in this film.
No, you don't.
But maybe in another cop drama, you could probably need that. Does it feature Japanese weaponry?
No. Again, these are all things that I'm not like, God, it would have been. What would have happened if they included a samurai sword or, I don't know, something along those lines?
Okay. I'm just checking the time. Does it feature creepy children?
No, it doesn't.
Does it feature bullies?
He's a bully, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a big bully.
He's a bully.
The guy also punches his girlfriend. Punches the prostitute girlfriend. So, okay.
Yeah, 16.5.
16.5.
Yeah.
Does it feature, this is one for you, Andy, does it feature Nazi themed anything?
No, it doesn't.
Fair enough.
Thank you very much for that. Everyone's going to think I'm a Nazi. Thank you.
He's not a Nazi, he just has interest in World War II. Like myself, I also have an interest
in
World
War II. I do a horribly convincing German accent as well.
You know, I've played a Nazi, you've played a Nazi. No. We've got that in common. Yeah. We're friends.
Yes.
We don't have, there's not swastikas covered.
No, there's not.
There's no swastikas here. There's no.
We're not burn my house.
We're not in SS uniforms. So just us being casual.
We're really not.
Okay.
16.5.
I'm just going to blitz through these.
Go for it.
Okay, ready? Does it feature a trending fad at the time?
No.
Does it feature LGBT content?
No.
Does it feature body horror?
No.
Does it feature an idiot character?
No.
No. Does it feature punk, rock, or rap music?
No.
Does it feature a celebrity cameo?
No.
No, yeah, I would. I know Werner Herzog does cameo, but I wouldn't say he's a celebrity.
Well, I didn't see him, yeah, so no.
Does it feature supernatural powers?
No.
Does it feature time travel?
No.
Does it feature space travel?
No.
Does it feature an exorcism?
No, but there's voodoo content, but no.
No. Does it feature child protagonists?
Child protagonists? No.
Does it feature nerds?
No.
Does it feature the military?
No.
Does it feature a crazed killer?
No.
Does it feature a vigilante?
No. Not really, no.
No, I'd argue he's not vigilante.
No, he's not.
Does it feature cults?
No, not as a main plot thread, no.
Aliens?
No.
Vampires?
No.
Zombies?
No.
Wizards?
No.
Mythical creatures?
No.
Mutants?
No.
Ghosts?
No.
Robots?
No.
Demons?
No.
Witches?
No.
Kaiju?
No.
Monsters?
No.
Apes?
No.
Samurai?
No.
Ninjas?
No.
Gangsters?
Yes.
Vincent Price?
No.
Samuel Jackson?
No.
And the final question on my cult test is, does it feature Nicolas Cage?
That's a big yes.
All right.
18.5.
18.5. You know what? I think with that score, going through all the questions we had, I don't think
it doesn't qualify.
It passes the test.
It doesn't qualify.
Mm.
But it's going to qualify anyway.
Yes.
Because it has to.
It has
to. Purely by the way it is.
I think the test I have is for very obviously out there cult films. And I don't think this is as out there it could have been.
No.
I think 18.5 is a decent score.
But it's not. It doesn't.
It doesn't fit those kind of really out there.
Yeah, like I've seen some like cult films which they almost get every single one of those,
exactly. Okay, guys, so I think we have come to an end.
We have.
Have you enjoyed yourself?
I really have as well. I didn't think it lasted an hour and a half. But
we've done it. We've done it. I thought we might have to have like a different section or something, but we've talked through the entire film in length for the full length of the podcast.
Mm. I do wonder how coherent it's going
to
be.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? We will find out. But if you guys want to find Spider-Man the Secret Balls on Facebook, if you just go into the search bar at the top and say put in Secret Balls, the page will come up. If you're looking for us on Twitter, it's @Dan_Balls. The podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and many, many other podcast platforms. Remember to hashtag us at hashtag join the Prattalion or hashtag prepare for prattle. Thank you very much, Andy. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, guys. See you next time.